And we're rolling. Episode 17 of Pitching to Contact. My name's Rich. My co-host's name is Pete. Pete, how's it going, man? Like, this is episode 17. That's nice.
17 weeks of talking to you. Oh my god. Wow, that's about what? That's 4 Dude. Months a weekish. That's a lot, man. But how do I put it? I'm doing good. Like I have a little bit of a cold right now. Other than that, just going to battle through that. But how about you, Rich? How's good old Canada?
Dude, everything's good here. Like Vladdy Guerrero Jr. is wearing a Blue Jays jersey. Like it's getting real up here. Dude, well, it's getting real.
Yeah, well, correction. That won't be for long, but then like 3 weeks into the season when the Blue Jays gain an extra year of, you know, eligibility on him, then yeah. Then he'll be back in a Blue Jays uniform hitting dongs, probably in the DH role because obviously his glove at third base is equivalent to a brick. But, you know, like, I mean, we don't need to talk about the bad things. Vladdy Guerrero is he's a godsend.
Well, here's the thing, man. I don't really think that that keeping Guerrero down for 3 weeks has anything to do with any window or whatever. I think it's really to do with just his lack of defense, man. Lack of defensive instincts, like bad glove, bad arm. Like,
you don't think the extra year has anything to do with it?
Absolutely nothing, dude. I have no idea what you're talking about right now.
Well, that's a bit, so then, like, not to jump on your sarcasm and drive points even like further home, but what about guys like Chris Bryant? Were the Cubs like concerned with a swing and miss rate or something?
Chris Bryant? Never heard of her.
Oh, never heard of her? Oh, well, no, she's a beautiful lady.
Where is she from? Is she from Toronto?
No, yeah. Actually, I'm pretty sure she's from Cleveland.
Cleveland, dude, you're single too.
I know.
One of the girls you find on Tinder?
Yeah. That is the first time in like 4 episodes that we have brought anything up about me being single.
That's true. It's been 4 episodes, which is equivalent to an entire month.
I know, man. It's like now you're bringing up old stuff, dude.
I know, and we got to keep things fresh. And speaking of keeping things fresh, we had a good podcast planned out for today, but then somebody kind of stole our thunder. Free agency is a thing, believe it or not. We don't really hear too much about it in baseball anymore, but you haven't heard of free agency, have you?
No, I don't know what you're talking about. Is it like... Like I've heard of agencies before in my life. Is it like are they like free? What were they trapped in before that? Like what's the issue here? I'm kind of curious. So, please explain this to me, Richard.
So it's like you have these players and they're really good at baseball. And when I say really good at baseball, I mean like really, really good. And what the thing is, they don't really have a job right now. And with free agency, they kind of go on this free agent market, which means they're jobless, but they're going to become employed. And that's kind of how it works. And today, somebody who's really good at baseball got employed. And he got employed for a lot of money because the San Diego Padres have signed Manny Machado.
Oh!
That guy for 10 years, $300 million.
That's like the equivalent of like saying a 30-year-old man living in his mom's basement finally getting a job at McDonald's. That's huge. It's like life is like just a big free agency market.
Yeah. Awesome. And just getting back to like real life and being a little more serious. The crazy thing is Manny Machado was a free agent for longer than he was an LA Dodger. And this dude's like a top 10 baseball player in the world. Like,
and think about this. He was a free agent for longer than he was an LA Dodger to be a San Diego Padre.
Yeah, dude. Money talks. And like, when I look at every MLB team, the San Diego Padres aren't a team that I'm like, yeah, this team knows what they're doing better than any of these other teams.
Are you gonna say that AJ Preller isn't a genius?
No, I mean, I can never say something like that, but I'm just saying there are 3 dudes that are owed $528 million. And I mean, Manny Machado is really good at baseball, but I mean, Eric Hosmer, I think that was a little bit of a stretch with Eric Hosmer, but I mean, this signing for the Padres, it makes them better. And they just got themselves one of the best baseball players in the world. There's a lot of money committed to 3 guys. But I think this is a good step in the right direction for the Padres. What do you think?
Isn't, And didn't they, and real quick before I talk about Machado, didn't they just get off the book of paying guys like Craig Kimbrell and all that? Like, they just get off the book not too long ago for that too. Like, those mistakes they made a long time ago. Matt Kemp.
Honestly, I have no idea, man. Beats me, but they need all the help they can get, and apparently money is not an issue for them. If I mean, they're like, throwing all this money to three guys.
Yeah, you know, like, here's the way I see it. First off, all AJ Preller jokes aside, I actually think he's actually a really competent general manager who makes some really solid moves. They have one of the best farm systems in Major League Baseball. I actually think people are like, oh, yeah, they just threw a lot of money at Hosmer and Machado. But let me like draw a little picture here. Hosmer is a very well-known leader. His stats on the field are going to be his stats on the field regardless. But Manny Machado is a bona fide superstar.
Mm-hmm. And he's a hustle, though.
Yep. Oh my God. What's not? Oh, don't get me started on that. But the point is that if you have the money to spend and you have such a young core and such a talented young core like you do, mm-hmm. and that's going to be within the next 2-3 years ready to play at Major League Baseball, why not already have the foundation of leaders already set there to help build the culture at the Major League level? Mm-hmm. I think. Not only does this signing bring in fans and, you know, brings in popularity to San Diego and just, you know, gives their baseball team relevance for the first time in a very long time, but at the same time, you're also building that culture at the major league level that, once again, we haven't seen in a very long time out of San Diego. Typically, when you think San Diego, you don't think of a baseball town.
Yeah,
you think about the city that the Chargers left.
Like, yeah, or the zoo.
Yeah. So,
the San Diego Zoo.
Or just the fact that it's San Diego and it's like drop dead gorgeous out there. And I feel like everybody would live there if it didn't cost like $5 million to like live anywhere decent. So, I mean, like, to me, this is an amazing move for the Padres. I'm happy for them. I'm happy that the ownership was willing to make such a generous donation because $300 million. It's a lot. Let's just agree that that's a lot of money.
I mean, it would be nice to have that. I've been getting scratch tickets for the past few weeks. Been like, I'm still waiting for $300 million.
Dude, I still get excited when my grandma hands me a 20 as a gift. Literally, Manny Machado now has more money than he's gonna know what to do. Than his great great grandkids are gonna know what to do.
Jesus. San Diego Padres sound a lot more giving than your grandma, man. But
hey, you know what? $20 is valuable if you know how to use it.
That is very true. That's actually one of the smartest things you've ever said.
And I don't say a lot of them, so write it down.
there we go. But it's funny that you mentioned their farm system, because now that they have Will Myers, they have Eric Hosmer, they have Manny Machado. And they have this farm filled with talent. And obviously, Fernando Tatis doesn't seem like he's getting moved anytime soon. But
not to cut you off and rudely cut you off, but weren't you just tweeting earlier about like how the Padres should trade like their entire farm system to the Toronto Blue Jays for Marcus Stroman? Now they have Machado, so obviously they want to just get a bunch of contending pieces now, so they just give their entire farm system to like Toronto.
Well, like, this is what I was gonna get into. Now that they have these guys and they're getting a guy like Fernando Tatis to come up, and they have so much talent on the farm, can't you see them like moving some of these top prospects for legitimate starters? Like, you've heard the Padres were involved in rumors all offseason. Like, Corey Kluber was a guy that was rumored to be going to the Padres. Marcus Stroman was a guy who was rumored to be going to the Padres. And like, I'm starting to think that the Padres they've accelerated their kind of process to the point where like they might want to win now very soon. And with the amount of pieces that they have that are movable, and like Francisco Mejia, I'm sorry, but you might have to be traded again. And I think that it's getting close to the time where you just have all these blue chip prospects that it might be time to go out and get like a legitimate ace starter or two. You know, what do you think about that?
Okay. Like, you know, here's my opinion on that. I was raised in the whole Cleveland Indians approach to things. And to me, prospects are like gold. And if you're going to trade them, you better damn well know what you're doing. Mm-hmm. Now, I guess from a traditional standpoint, that would be not necessarily the worst idea ever. But I think AJ Preller and the rest of his front office, which is probably full of some very, very smart individuals, understands that just a few years ago, they did something similar when they traded for Matt Kemp. They went out and traded a bunch of their prospects for Craig Kimbrell. Andrew Cashner was already part of that rotation. They added other pieces as well. And remember how well that, like, whenever the super team was in San Diego, and remember how well that turned out?
Yeah, but does that mean you just can't roll the dice again?
Oh, no, it's not that you can't roll the dice again. I just think it's not necessarily that black or white, and we need to trade prospects to get a Corey Kluber, even though Corey Kluber – because, like, for example, say Corey Kluber, the amount of prospects you're going to have to give up and pitching prospects nonetheless too, that you're going to have to give up in a deal to get a guy to the caliber of Corey Kluber is insane. Like, to me, if the right deal pops up, like, don't get me wrong, if the Yankees can get James Paxton for Justice Sheffield and you feel like that's a, you know, a fair deal and you can get something like that, I agree. But at the same time, like, I'm looking at this top prospect list, and I'm looking at these guys, and there's not a lot of these guys that I would really just be sitting here, like, on the edge of my seat saying, okay, he's tradable. Okay, he's tradable. Because they got a lot of arms in here. And when I see a lot of really high talented, high ceiling arms in a prospect, in a prospect farm, I just see potential, dude. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm looking here, and I see Chris Paddock, Luis Arias, Adrian Morejon, like, oh, a bunch of these guys that are just straight up like thugs. And to me, like, I know it's not the bona fide ticket selling star that you want right now. But at the same time, like, these are all guys who have the upside and potential to be those guys in the future. And sometimes I feel like it's better to hang on to those prospects than it is to, say, go out and get a guy who already has a bunch of baggage under him, probably already has his contract, and et cetera, et cetera. But once again, if it's the right deal, it's the right deal. I know that's a very multi-sided answer, and I probably used way too many words to explain that. But Richard, tell me, how do you feel about this? Here's
the thing with what you said about the amount of arms the Padres have in their farm system. Just because they have so much, like, why not dangle a few of those arms and trade? Like, for example, you look at a guy like Ryan Weathers. He was drafted in the first round, and it's a high upside arm. But, I mean, when's he going to make his debut on the major league level? Not until, like, what, 2021, 2022?
He's projected for 2022. So
yeah, so there we go. And are we expecting for him to just be a flat-out star when he gets to his MLB debut? Like, Manny Machado right now is, what, 26, 27. This is Manny Machado entering his prime, and he's been good, really good for the past few years. Obviously, he's been really good since he got here, but I think you got to just capitalize on this window for guys like Manny Machado. Like, you're paying Eric Hosmer a lot of money. Like, you can't wait until guys like Ryan Weathers makes his debut and helps you out, right? You can't wait on guys like Mackenzie Gore. I think it's like Chris Paddock. Like, we talked about this with Peyton last week. I think Chris Paddock is going to be an ace, and he's as close to anything untouchable as there is in professional baseball. Chris Paddock's untouchable. Fernando Tatis is untouchable. But, I mean, when you get to guys like Francisco Mejia, Mackenzie Gore, Ryan Weathers, I think these guys are – they should be touchable. And I think you should kind of dangle them in trades if you can get something that helps you out now. And if it's guys like Corey Kluber, if it's guys like that are legitimate established starters who can help you win right now, I think you have to pull the trigger. Like,
I'm going to be honest with you. If I was the Indians, if the only way I'm even considering a Corey Kluber deal with San Diego is if Paddock's in the deal. That's the only way.
Mm-hmm.
Just logically, but I'm sorry. Continue what you were saying, though, Richard.
You wouldn't say no if Mackenzie Gore is in it.
Here's the thing, though: the Indians are still trying to contend right now. This isn't a situation where we're trying to tool up for 4 or 5 years down the road. This is if we're trading Corey Kluber, we want top end prospects that are ready to go now.
Yeah, but I mean, Chris Paddock's not ready to go now.
I mean, he's not ready to go now, but he's definitely a lot further along the line than, say, Mackenzie Gore. My bad. I kind of coughed up my throat a little bit there, but
that's lovely. But here's my thing. Like, obviously, come from a Cleveland Indians perspective, and for you guys, these prospects are like gold. But when you're giving $300 million away to Manny Machado, like, for you, blue chip prospects, that's tradable assets right there. Like, prospects are for the poor, man. And when you give out $300 million contracts, like, you can play with the big boys. And like, look at what teams do nowadays. Like the Boston Red Sox, they have a bunch of guys who made it up from their prospect pool, but they traded a ton of dudes to help out their team. Look at the Chicago Cubs, what they did. They traded a bunch of top end guys for guys like Aroldis Chapman. I think the Padres might be coming to a time where they might have to focus on trading some of these big names, and especially because like right now at this point they can't compete with like the Dodgers. I don't know if they can compete with like the Rockies right now, and they have to do something to get close to them. Getting Manny Machado isn't enough. This is like a big move in the right direction, but I mean, what are they going to do to compete against those teams? Are they just going to keep waiting until
I think it's a mix, but like, to support your argument a little bit, Richard, I'm going to read off to you the San Diego Padres lineup with Manny Machado in it right now. I don't know if you saw this tweet, but here's their projected lineup. Ian Kinsler, Manny Machado, Eric Hosmer, Will Myers, Hunter Renfroe, Franchy Cordero, Luis Urias, Austin Hedges, and then your pitcher. That's actually not a bad lineup right there.
It's not a bad lineup, but how does
it's not a great lineup, but it's definitely a lot better of a lineup than maybe like you would initially think.
Mm-hmm. But now tell me what their starting rotation is like heading into next season.
They're starting. Oof. Sorry, I'm still on the bandwagon of remembering that Clayton Richard was considered to be one of the open day starters. Like,
he's a Blue Jay right now.
I know he's a Blue Jay now, but I'm just thinking back to those days. Like, they signed Jared Weaver just for the hell of it. Like, I'm gonna be honest with you. I'm not a San Diego Padres fan, and like, I'm sorry for offending any San Diego Padres fans out right there right now, but like, I actually have to look that up and see who their projected opening day starter is, because that's
the thing.
Yeah.
And like, but they did sign Aaron Loop recently, which is really big. Aaron Loop has been a key contributor to the Blue Jays for a really, really long time. And God bless that guy. But that's the thing, man. Like, I just don't know. Like, I don't know anybody who's going to give them innings. I don't know anybody who's really just going to help them win games.
Okay, ready for this?
Yeah, hit me with it.
They're according to MLB.com, mm-hmm. their number one projected pitcher right now is a guy by the name of Joey Lucchesi, which I don't know if you've ever heard of that name. I have not up to this point in time. Which is either a good thing or a bad thing. He was a fourth round pick out of South Missouri State.
Uh-huh.
He's projected to be their starting guy. Let me see if I can find some StatCast data on him real quick.
I mean, I believe Robbie Erlin's still there. There's a
guy. Robbie Erlin is still there.
Mm-hmm.
I get what your point is though, that mm-hmm. like they don't I'm looking at the exit velocity against and ooh.
Like yikes. But the fact is like they need innings right now.
Yes, they do.
Manny Machado is not going to help them get innings. And maybe they're going to accelerate Chris Paddock. I think there's a big chance that he can actually start at some point this season in the majors.
I think it would be later in the season, depending on how he develops. But I would not be shocked if in August I'm getting a notification saying that Mr. Paddock is making his major league debut tonight.
And, dude, for sure. I think I can argue that Chris Paddock was the best pitcher in the minors last season.
You can argue. I mean, I don't think you need to make an argument.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you need to make an argument. I think he was the best in minor league baseball for sure.
Yeah, and I'm kind of shook. Like, I'm looking at the 2018 Padres top 30. The fact that Chris Paddock is even behind Francisco Mejia.
Okay, what is it with you and Francisco Mejia?
I'm just not a fan. I just don't see it. When you're just traded around so often,
traded around. And you're once.
but like he's always in rumors, and it's just like he just keeps dropping down prospect rankings. Like he has no position. I'm still kind of I'm not 100% sold on the bat either. You know, like I just have so many questions about this dude, and I don't know how you don't.
Well, maybe it was because I saw him hit, and he was like, I agree with you. The position is for sure.
It's a big question mark.
It's a big, but the guy genuinely can hit, mm-hmm. and like he even proved that. Like to me, when you watched him take at bats at the major league level, he still proved that he could hit. I don't think catcher is a long term position for him. I see him more as a corner infielder, outfielder. Mm-hmm. But that's not going to necessarily be a problem with the Padres because they have guys like Austin Hedges in their system. Not in their system, but on their major league squad right now. And he's probably as close to, at least in my opinion, on the fielding side of things, a cornerstone level catcher. I'm pretty high on Austin Hedges. But, like, in general, though, like, I never got why, like, last week y'all were hating on Francisco Mejia really much. Like, it seems every other week you're, like, throwing some snidey comment at Francisco Mejia. And it's like, you know what? I think the kid deserves some love. I think you deserve to give this kid some love.
You're just protecting his honor at this point. But do you see power in that bat, like projectable power in that bat for him to stick in a corner outfield spot?
I mean, the way that's Petco Park plays, like I don't necessarily know. A lot of his power is very much pull pop. Mm-hmm. And it's definitely a lot more from the right side than it is the left. Yeah. So to me, like, I think he's going to be hitting a lot into this metal supply towers, but like I could potentially see 20 home run pop. I see it if he gets hot, but no, in terms of like your traditional outfielder who hits 25 to 30 bombs and drives in 90 to 100 RBIs, I don't see Francisco Mejia as that. Doesn't mean he can't hit, though. I see the guy hitting for a plus average and having a little bit of pop in his bat. Mm-hmm.
No, that's fair. Like, yeah. I just think with there are certain guys that just don't click with me. Like, I just have gut feelings. I feel like every single scout just has that, where they just look at a guy and they're like, I just don't see it there. And I think a guy like Francisco Mejia is that for me. And just like we talked about Kyle Tucker last week, I just don't think they like just something doesn't click in my mind. And like, for example, up here in Toronto, I'm at a showcase the other night and I'm just watching all these guys swing. And there's one kid, who's going to be draft eligible this upcoming season, upcoming June. And a lot of people like him, but I just watch him play. And like the bat speed's explosive, quick hands, like guy's a freak. Like he looks like a sprinter and like he's athletic, but just something just doesn't click. Like Pete, have you ever had that when you're just like looking at a player and just something just doesn't click with him, despite what a lot of scouts say? And what?
I actually have a perfect example of that. And it was actually at the major league level too. And I got to watch his career kind of fizzle out before him. Do you remember the name Matthew Laporta?
No, I actually don't.
Okay, well, that's good that you don't, and that just shows you exactly how well he panned out. So basically, back in 2008, I believe it was, when the Indians first blew up after – well, it was either 2008 – actually, never mind. 2009, correct. Just as a correction, it was when they blew up their 2007 team that took them to Game 7 of the ALCS. They traded away CC Sabathia to the Milwaukee Brewers. Now, part of that deal, and it was the big blue chip prospect in this deal. His name was Matthew Laporta. He was a cornerstone first baseman, projected cornerstone first baseman. The guy had a legit power tool, had a plus hitting tool, had a plus glove at first base. This guy was already in AAA, seasoned. He was one of the top-ranked prospects in Major League Baseball. The Indians were extremely high on him. And I watched a lot of film of the guy because this was back right at the beginning when this is like me in sixth grade when I first started really getting into baseball on the development, like on the developmental level, and really started wanting to learn the ins and outs of the game. And I started watching him, and like like you said, just when you watch players and when you have that kind of natural gift of just being able to kind of see, like, something like, yes, all the tools are there, but does he have it? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And, like, that it's, I wish I could describe it, but I can't. You just watch a guy and you could just tell that that person is going to be great or that person isn't going to be great. And I still use that on a daily basis today. But the point I'm trying to make, though, is that I watched this guy and I saw that he had a really, really fast bat speed. I saw that he had a really good mid at first base and just the ball came off the bat really well. In the terms of Moneyball, the movie, good body, good face, blah, 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 you know, all that good stuff. But something just didn't click to me. Something was like, okay, I see all that, but something just tells me that this guy isn't going to project out well in Major League Baseball. Well, 3 years later, he's out of baseball, playing in some Mexican league because he came up to the major leagues and he hit like 190. Like, it was bad. In the bright side, though, the Cleveland Indians did not lose that trade at all because they actually got a player to be named later. And the player to be named later was actually the projectable center fielder at the time by the name of Michael Brantley. Michael Brantley obviously grew up in the Indian system, was developed as their center fielder, and then got a lot stronger as once he got to the major league level. He could already hit for contact pretty well, developed a power tool within the next few years. And now he's a corner outfielder for the Houston Astros with one of the smoothest left-handed swings in Major League Baseball. So, I mean, like, obviously these things turn out really well, and the Indians seem like they do a really good job with just picking up these scrappy on-the-fly pieces and turning them into something. Corey Kluber was one. Corey Kluber in the Jake Westbrook deal was one. Trevor Bauer was actually one. Mike Clevenger was one. Carlos Carrasco was one. Like, they do a really good job with all that kind of stuff. Not to go on a 10-minute tangent about the Indians and all that fun stuff, but yeah, I completely get you, Richard. I completely get all that. Like, I know exactly what you're talking about there.
And you kind of touched on Trevor Bauer. Did you know he recently had an interview with Sports Illustrated? Did he see what he said about his?
Oh yeah, he was talking about like the rules to date him.
Dude, those are amazing. I read that today. It blew my mind, and I'm not even remotely surprised.
Like, no social media pics, and I'm allowed to sleep with any other girl. I feel like what?
Awesome. No feelings. Second, there's feelings. Like, cut. What's the second rule? No social media posts, so like nobody can know that we're even dating. And like his third rule is like I can sleep with anybody I want, and if there's an issue with that, like it's like I'm sorry, we can be polite platonic friends.
Okay, so basically, like what he's basically saying, and excuse the language at home, guys, but I don't necessarily know any other way to put this. If you want to date me, you're basically my fuck buddy.
Yeah. That's pretty much it. And it's really funny because like being in grad school, you kind of have a lot of people in grad school who just like, they just don't want to start relationships. They don't want to have kids. They just want to just focus on their own thing and just kind of have somebody on the side. And that's just kind of the vibe I got. Like I was, I read this article next to a buddy of mine who's helping me out in grad school. And I'm like, dude, this sounds exactly like you. This is going to be you. And he's like, yeah, this is awesome. Like, I'm going to be Trevor Bauer. I'm like, yeah, I guess. Like, not really. But that's you right there. And Pete, something you actually touched on in your kind of mini talk there was just how you got into baseball when you were in grade six. And that's something I kind of wanted to discuss a little bit and just dive into it. Like when you did first get into baseball, like how did it grow from just like a passion into something you just really, really wanted to do?
You know, Richard, I don't actually get asked this question often. I'm actually happy that you're asking it because I think it's a very valuable question, not just for myself to answer, but anybody who like works in baseball or who has the aspiration to work in baseball in the future. I think it's one question they have to kind of be able to kind of look at themselves in the mirror and answer. To me, where this kind of all started, I knew from a very young age that obviously I think everybody's first dream is to be a Major League Baseball player. And once you learn very quickly that that's probably not happening, to me it was just there was never another option for me. Like I was always the kid in like middle school when, you know, people were talking about like, hey, you got to start thinking about like maybe like careers, about what you want to do when you get older. And I'm going to have you take this online quiz and all this fun stuff to, you know, help you guide you along. You could be a nurse. You could be an engineer. You could be a doctor. You can do all that kind of stuff. And I was just like, where's the column that says I work in baseball? Like, it was just always something that I always hung on to. And honestly, for quite a while, I was kind of ashamed of. But in general, like, I just was so passionate about the game of baseball. I still to this day don't necessarily know what drew me to it. But, like, ever since, like, I was in sixth grade, it was like the Cleveland Indians were on. I would watch them 162 games a year. And I'm not even joking or exaggerating that. Like, from April 5th until late September, early October, doesn't matter what their record was, doesn't matter anything like that. I was just sitting and watching the game. And when you watch that many games and, you know, you watch that many players and you watch that many pitches, there's a lot of things that you, there's a lot of things that you learn. And like how you talk about, you know, just kind of being able to read a player and just be able to kind of figure out, does he have it or not? Like, I think that kind of stuff gets picked up from just watching so much baseball like that. So in general, that's where I really got started. It didn't start with collecting baseball cards or anything like that. To me, it just got started with the Indians were on TV. I would watch a lot of Cleveland Indians baseball on TV. I have a really good friend that I'm blessed to have that, like, him and I would spend $10 on tickets because that's how cheap tickets were back then. And go to at least 20 to 30 Indians home games a year and sit in the cheap seats just to be there. And, you know, honestly, I mean, it was a kind of interesting way to grow up, but I'm really proud of it. And honestly, I owe a lot of like what I understand about in terms of little nuances and what to do in little certain situations in the game when, for example, when I'm coaching and all that stuff now to all that time I spent at the ballpark or watching baseball back then. But I want to reflect the question on you too, Richard. I don't even know what age you got so like infatuated with the game of baseball, but like talk to me a little bit about like your journey up to this point, a little bit about like how that started for you and what you did to kind of help grow your connection with the game.
Right. Well, I mean, with me, it's a little bit different. My parents are both immigrants, and like when they moved in and they had me, I don't think my dad still knows what baseball is. I know my mom doesn't. The warrant's still out of my dad. And I started watching baseball when I was like really, really young, I think like 7 or 8 years old. And we had a cottage and I always just watched baseball there because we only had one channel on TV there. It was like CBC. I know you probably don't even know what that is, but back then, there were baseball games on CBC for whatever reason. Canadians would find that weird. But back then, that was the thing. And I was just always watch baseball. Like, I love watching Carlos Delgado play baseball. Like, Vernon Wells before bad things happened to Vernon Wells. Like, Roy Halladay. Like, Gustavo Sachin when he had, like, his cologne. Like, I just remember all of that stuff so vividly. And growing up, I played a lot of soccer. I played a lot of basketball because, like, my parents are immigrants from Europe. That's what they played, and that's what they signed me up for. So when I was watching baseball, like, I kind of had to get into baseball myself. So, like, I had buddies who played baseball. Like, I had to help my – I remember I used to, like, help my parents out at work when I was, like, 9 or 10 years old. So they would give me, like, allowance money so I can go buy a bat. And from then I like kind of begged them to like have me play baseball, like even like house league. I don't care. Like sign me up for anything. And that's how I kind of started playing baseball when I was like 10 years old. And my parents were like, oh, he's probably out playing soccer. Like they have no idea what baseball is. And I just got really, really close to the game. And I've met a lot of people through baseball. And a lot of my closest friends that just played baseball. And we played baseball growing up. And Pete, we talked about this off the air like a while ago, like a long time ago. And I went through a lot of stuff growing up that wasn't too positive. And when like I was going through tough stuff in my life, whenever I get onto a baseball diamond, just like everything went away. And I just felt just very comfortable at home. Like, and that's when I kind of knew that I just really wanted to do something in baseball, but I didn't really know what. And all like I got into university eventually, and I had like a ton of different plans on what to do with my life. Like med school was one thing I was considering, like doing stuff in kinesiology. And then in third year, I was like, I really like baseball a lot and it's a passion and I really want to do more with it and just not have it just be a passion. That's when I got into scouting. That's when I started working with Prep Baseball Report and they gave me an incredible opportunity. And after that, working with Evolution Metrics and obviously just coming to grad school and starting to do pitching research and just like one thing led to the next. And that was a long rant, but that's
I completely can level with you on that. Yeah. I think a lot of people and a lot of the viewers that take the time to listen to our podcast can probably agree with this. Like
it's really cool. It's really cool to see how so many people love doing this, but they just have so many different reasons as to why.
Mm-hmm. I know. And like everybody's got their own story with this, but like I can kind of relate to you on a certain level, Richard. I know we talked about those things and talked about like how obviously there was not necessarily that many positive vibes going on in your younger childhood. And this was an escape for that. And, you know, for me, it was the same thing. I'll openly say this, I was bullied horrendously as a child, which unfortunately seems like that's more of a norm than anything now. And like I didn't have a lot of friends, and I didn't like it wasn't Jesus. Like I was going outside and playing with people every single day. To me, like, but like when I got to a baseball stadium or when I was, you know, on the field playing myself, or hell, even now when I'm sitting in a dugout coaching other individual, like coaching college level individuals who nor playing this game, to me, it's just, it feels free. I feel free. I feel like everything that is going bad in my life or anything that's causing me stress or causing me doubt or anything like that, it just goes away. Like, I think everybody has something like that in their world and they can, you know, relate to that. And like, to me, the two things for that are music and baseball, but more importantly, baseball. It just seems like I get on a field and I get in that energy and that competitive environment where it's me versus you, mano a mano. And I feel for like once in my life, I don't feel like a little guy anymore. I feel like I'm in control of my own situation. I'm the big guy here. I can do what I need to do, and I just feel free, and I feel able to spread my wings. And, yeah. You know, like
it's kind of like Pete when Pete finds that girl on Tinder.
Oh, like, dude, yeah, Tinder into this. Oh,
yeah, God. And then like she's the one. Baseball is that Tinder girl, and like she's the one. She has a great It's a super like. She has a great bio, great picture. It's like you gotta swipe. You got a super swipe. That's how it works.
Wait, real quick though. Some news for the fans though. I deleted my Tinder like back in like late December. Like it's not really a thing anymore.
Oh, but it's an ongoing joke.
I know it's definitely an ongoing joke. We can joke about it forever, but I'm just saying.
Oh, I will. I can't wait to talk to your future wife about this.
Podcast with you. It's not like I'm gonna go use my swipes for the day because I don't use Tinder anymore.
I honestly, this is gonna be an ongoing joke forever. I can't wait to talk to your wife, your future wife, about this.
Oh God! I hope my future wife doesn't hear this pod. I think she hears this pod. It won't be my future wife. It'll be my future ex-wife that I'm paying royalties to.
We're gonna throw this one into the archives and make sure she never listens to this again, or just cut it off at like the 30-minute mark.
Yeah. What is this? What is this pitching to contact thing? Oh, don't worry about it. I was 21. Yeah. Or now I'm 20.
And plus, it's like 20-30 now. What's pitching the contact?
What the hell is that? We pitched to miss barrels, dude. Yeah. What are you talking about?
You got to have the stuff to miss barrels and strike everybody out. Pitching the contact? Like, Marcus Stroman's not around anymore.
No, dude, it's 20-30. You have to throw 99 miles an hour minimum just to even be in AAA.
There we go, man. But we kind of talked about how it all began for us. You've been in coaching for a pretty long time now. It's been a few years. Yeah. Like what do you want for the future for you in baseball? Like, is it the coaching side? Is it the MLB side? And like, what has the coaching side just really taught you about the game, man?
You know, obviously there's a lot of sides to that question. I'm going to try not to spend 10 minutes answering it, but to me, the overall end game, and I actually got asked this earlier today by one of my other coaches, what my overall end game was. To me, I just want to be in a position in baseball where I'm happy, but more importantly, I'm influencing individuals every single day to be a better version of themselves than they were the day before. The one thing about coaching that has touched me that, like, I think not necessarily any front office position can really, you know, do, and to some extent, is that you're developing individuals every single day. I get the privilege of going to work every single day and not even calling it work. But on top of that, I get to say, not only am I developing better baseball players, but I'm developing better humans. And like, whether that, to me, right now, my main goal is to be more than likely coaching at the highest level that I possibly can be, whether that is D2, D3, D1 baseball, powerhouse D1 school, possibly even professional baseball when we get there. But to me, like, I just want to develop individuals, and I want to develop them through the game of baseball. I want to make them better. Not only do I want to make pitchers throw 90 miles and, you know, 90 plus miles an hour with wicked spin, but I also want to turn them into, I want to turn boys into men, and I want to, you know, turn them into family men. I want them to get really good degrees. I want them to get jobs and all that kind of stuff. All the things that in college baseball, you kind of also have to teach young men about, and just teach them about life and just connect with them and help them grow as an individual. I know I keep saying that a lot, but to me, like, that's what I'm really passionate about. So I think overall, like, college baseball is probably the route for me right now. Obviously there's a lot more benefits in college baseball straight off the bat than there is professional baseball. But to me, I would love to coach professional baseball at some point in time. I'd love to be a professional pitching coach or working in player development for a Major League Baseball team at some point in time. Like that, like, say someone like Desi Drusel, like, that is someone that I would definitely like to be when I get older. I'm very long and far away from that right now, but to me, that's definitely, like, at least long-term, what I would like to eventually be is probably a high-level D1 baseball coach. And then maybe when I feel like time is right, making that adjustment from there to, say, professional baseball and seeing where that takes me. On top of that, I'd like to start a family and have kids, because to me, like, family is the most important thing. But yeah, Richard, like, what about you, man? I know you do all the stuff in ergonomics and biomechanical research, but if you, like, when you look back on your life, say when you're 40 plus years old, whenever, what would you have liked to accomplish?
Well, first of all, let me just say that my biggest takeaway from what you just said was that you're going to be a much better dad than I will. Like, oh my God, man. Like, here's my goal as a dad. Let me tell you my goal as a father. I'm going to produce a genetic freak, like an athletic beast of nature. And I'm going to whip this boy into shape, and he's going to be a really good athlete. He's going to be like on the whatever program the Dominican Republic kids are on, like no school, no nothing. And they're going to be just throwing 90 from the time they're 12. That's going to be my kid. And then my kid's going to ride into the D1 program, be really good there, become a major league ace, and I'm going to ride his coattails until the day I die. Like, that's going to be me as a dad.
Okay, well, to me,
my kid's going to be a machine, man.
I would like to make this note, too, not to completely get off traced from the topic of baseball, but more about the topic of fatherhood and family. I know one thing for sure is that to me, I'm not going to force my kids to play baseball. I'm going to introduce them to the game of baseball and in their eyes what dad does for a living. And
what? What? Yeah. Manny Machado just got $300 million. What do you mean you're not going to force them to play baseball?
Listen, Richard.
What are you going to tell them to do? You're going to tell them to be like a janitor? You're going to tell them to be a teacher to teach kids how to be better at life? Manny Machado just got $300 million. What are you doing? My kid's going to get a bat the second he's out the womb. And he's going to be the greatest baseball player to ever live. He's going to be Mike Trout on steroids. And that's because he's going to start cycling when he's like 12.
Richard, I have a strong belief that, like, especially from just the way my parents raised me, when they were kind of just like, listen, I want you to just do what makes you happy. And to me, like, there's so many more layers to me as an individual than just baseball. And I think you know that. And I know everybody who's close to me and I've opened up my life to a little bit know that there's so many more layers to me than just this game. This game is just happens to be something I'm very good at. I'm 20 and have the privilege of already coaching at a collegiate level. That doesn't happen too often. But the point is that, like, I'm not going to force my kids to play baseball. I want them, if they want to be a school teacher, if they want to be something like that, or they have a different passion somewhere else, like, it's my job as a dad, not only to make them a better, it's not necessarily to make them what I want them to be. It's about making them the best individual that they possibly can be for life, whether regardless of what, you know, whatever they choose that for their career. I don't care if they make $300 million or $8 an hour. I just want them to be happy, and I want them to be good people and strong individuals with good mindsets. Like,
I'm going to answer. Okay. I'm going to answer my question, the question you have for me.
Yeah, now. Yeah, please. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off. I just wanted to make that noted real quick.
Yeah, well, my kid's still going to be a machine. So now we have like 5 more minutes left on this pod. So let's wrap this one up. So yeah. To answer your question, first of all, I have my kind of background in baseball is first and foremost, it's the scouting side. And just if you look at how baseball is right now, especially on the major league level, like teams are just cutting scouts, honestly, monthly because of how the game is changing. And here's my opinion. I think you have to have some sort of scouting background, some sort of scouting knowledge to work in baseball, no matter what department of baseball. You have to have something. And I feel like... Sorry?
Even human resources?
No, not human resources. I mean, like, player development, like, if you're in, like, if you're dealing with, like, analytics, if you're... Dude, not human resources. Jesus Christ, man. Ticket sales? Yo, come in, come all. Watch Vladdy Guerrero's bat speed. No. But, like, if you're working on, like, the player side, like, if you're player development analytics, like, you're dealing with, like, arbitration, that kind of stuff, you have to have some sort of knowledge. And that's kind of why I wanted to blend my interest and my knowledge in kinesiology and biomechanics with baseball and with my scouting side. And I really think that technology and all this 3D motion capture stuff that you hear from Driveline and all the hires that you see in UH baseball, I think that's the future of baseball. We're creating machines. That's why my kid's going to be a machine. Like, spin rate is important now. Everybody has rap sodas at spring training. Everybody has all force plates, pitching labs. I think this is the future of the game. And I think that's my thing. I want to blend the two together. And I kind of want to see where this takes me. I don't know. That's kind of what the beauty of this game is. Like, I started off at Prep Baseball Report. I didn't think I would ever join this sort of company, Evolution Metrics. I didn't think I would ever meet Pete Horner and we would have 17 straight episodes of Pitching to Contact. But that's kind of the beauty of the game. Like, you just keep meeting people and you keep working and you keep moving up the ranks. Like, the stairway up kind of never stops. And that's, I'm just kind of interested to see what happens next.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. Like, to me, like, if you asked me, I knew when I came into college, I was actually a sport management major, which was a terrible decision at the time. But like, if you asked me back then, like, in 2.5 years, you were going to be sitting on a podcast with a Canadian dude that you talk to regularly and you work for a company that scouts for multiple major league organizations and collects a lot of data points and has a lot of very talented and bright individuals that you get to help grow every single day into major league baseball minds, I would tell you that you're crazy. Like, I never thought that even – I'll be honest with you. I knew I wanted to work in baseball. I wanted to work in player development. I either wanted to coach or I wanted to work in a front office. I never thought in a million years – I had no clue how the hell I was going to do it. I had no clue how the hell I was going to get there. I just knew I wanted to do it. And if you're going to tell me in 2.5 years I was going to be in this kind of position where I'm definitely in a at least in my own opinion, feel like I'm in a pretty solid position right now, like I would tell you that you're crazy. And I'm sure, Richard, 2.5 years ago, you'd probably say the same thing. So, I mean, it's amazing. It is honestly amazing the journey that we've kind of been on so far.
So right before we wrap this one up, I have just one quick question for you.
Hit me with it.
Do you know where Canada is?
Okay. I believe. Okay.
We're gonna come back next week and we're gonna teach Pete where Canada is. Okay. This has been it for episode 17 of Pitching to Contact. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for always listening. Until next week.